You're listening to Look at My Records. This is episode 235, and I'm your host, Tom Gallo. This edition of Look at My Records features an interview with Sophie Negrini of Los Angeles's Jane Lane. Back in April, Jane Lane released their long-awaited debut full-length Love Letters. The record was over a decade in the making, collecting songs that have origins in the mid-2010s and showcases Negrini's expert ability at crafting love songs that are equal parts cutting, dreamy, and poppy. During our interview, Sophie and I chatted about the project's teenage origins, its hiatus and eventual reemergence in 2020, and the evolution of its sound over the last decade. Plus, Sophie picked some awesome records from Bob Dylan, Big Star, Guided by Voices, and more. We'll dive into our interview right after the jump. If you're interested in hearing more episodes of Look at My Records, they're available on all streaming platforms. Please remember to rate, review, like, and subscribe on your platform of choice. I also encourage you to check out the Look at My Records website, where you can find reviews, information on upcoming live events, premieres of new music, playlists, and a whole lot more. Check it out at lookatmyrecords.com. I'm here with Sophie.
Hello.
Jane Lane. Hey, how are you?
I'm lovely. How are you?
I'm good. Congrats on the release of your debut full-length Love Letters. Came out in April via Kingfisher Blues.
Yes, yes.
It's available on vinyl via Bandcamp, janelanemusic.bandcamp.com.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So how's it feel to have this record out in the world?
It feels so, I mean, it feels amazing. It also, like, it was just such a long time coming. And I feel like I don't want to be, like, a negative Nancy being like, oh, this shit's always so anticlimactic when I, like, put stuff out. You know, there's such a buildup. But, like, it kind of is, because then you're like, okay, now what, you know? So it's like I had all of this, like that record, I just put so much into it. It evolved in so many different ways. And like a lot of the songs came out of like just when I first started writing songs. Like there's the last song on that record is one of the oldest songs I've ever written that I wrote when I was 16, which is wild. But yeah, it's like, it feels like a baby that I gave birth to that I had a long and challenging, I don't know, pregnancy with or something.
Healthy, bouncing baby record.
Yeah, but she came out okay, and I definitely am like, I'm so happy that I'm just like, here it is, baby. Like, this is it. It feels so good to just, you know. The greatest part of it is, like, just knowing that people can just listen to the songs now. And the songs as they were intended to be. And I'm just really excited for more people to hear it as time goes on. And, yeah, I'm just excited for it to be like a tangible thing in the world and to hopefully get into more people's ears, you know?
It's a great record, and it seems like a lot of people are enjoying it so far, and more people will hear it and enjoy it as well. I wanted to touch on the trajectory of this project. I think it started when you were a teenager in high school, and it was active around then kind of was on a bit of a hiatus for a little bit, and then reemerged around 2020 during the pandemic. So just tell us a little bit about the history of this project how and when it started, what led to that kind of hiatus a little bit, and then what, you know, the reemergence.
Yeah, so I first, how do I put this? I've been writing songs for quite a while. I started writing music when I was maybe 12 years old.
Oh, and wow.
Yeah, so it's been a minute. I mean, I didn't really, it took me like a few years to muster up the courage to actually perform any of them in front of people. I think it took me like 5 or 6 years to actually ask people to play with me, you know? And so when I was like 18, 19, I had some of my friends from high school play with me, and we just started doing stuff locally, and like it kind of seemed, as soon as I started doing that, then when I was 19, I got asked to play in Peach Kelly Pop, and this was in 2015. And so I was trying to do both, but I mean, we had a very hefty touring schedule, so it was, my life was kind of like, you know, I worked my minimum wage job, and then I would go on tour with Peach Kelly Pop, and then try to fit in Jane Lane stuff here and there. But it was really, I wanted to focus on it, on Jane Lane more, but it was just hard because like I was having to travel and do all these fantastic tours that I'm really glad that I got to do. But so that in like 2018, I was like, okay, you know, I think it's time for me to focus on Jane Lane more. So I stopped playing in PKP, and I kind of just played sporadically, but mostly tried to focus on recording. And yeah, then in 2020, when I was like, cool, I finished my record, I'm ready to put it out. That was in March of 2020. I had this song 14 Days that I did end up putting out when I said I was going to, as like the first single of the record. I ended up putting it out in March, but I was, you know, no one knew what was going on. And I was terrified, like, to put out an album, self-release an album, mind you. I didn't have a label or anything. And I was just so scared for it to just be swept under the rug. So I was like, I don't want to put this out yet. I just kind of want to see what's going to happen in life and in the world. And so what I ended up doing was, like, I think in October of 2020, I put out another single that was not a song off that record. It was a newer song that I wrote called Flowers from Athens. And then I kind of just decided, like, you know, I'm changing as a musician. A lot of the songs on this album just, like, don't represent, like, my debut anymore, like, what I would want it to be. So I ended up just kind of putting out singles. And then the EP I put out in 2022, Okay With Dancing Alone, was actually, like, those were four songs that would have been, like, my original record. Like, the 2020, like, unreleased, like, COVID Jane Lane record, it was a mixture of some singles that I put out, that EP, and then songs that I have since just, like, shelved.
Do you think those will ever come out? Do you tweak those? Do you work on those songs still?
Yes and no. Like, there was one song, like, Your Own Ride Home, for example, that's on Love Letters. That was a song I was like, I don't want to put this on the record. I'm just going to leave this here. And then I ended up just speeding it up a little bit. But we kept the old recording, and then Joey remastered it. My boyfriend, who
is a producer, right?
Yeah. So we just kind of tweaked it. But there are some things I might go back. I do have a tendency to, like, let songs sit for a long time and then just totally change them around because, like, I don't know, I'll be inspired by something new and then I'm like, this is still a good idea. Like, I try to, like, not, I don't know, give up on, like, any songwriting idea. Like, I feel like there's value in, like, there's, if it stuck with me for a while, like, there's something there that, like, could maybe be used, but also, I don't know, I also have, like, fantasies about one day putting out a cassette of, like, all my demos and unreleased tracks, you know? So, yeah, I definitely go back and forth picking from, like, old songs when I'm working on, like, a new batch of material, or I'm like, oh, I'm going to let them sit. I don't know. It's always different. Sorry, that was a big, mushy answer.
So kind of to touch on some of the things that you just said, you mentioned that Love Letters was a long time coming, and some of the songs are really old. Specifically, you said When I Lost You was written when you were 16 years old. So I was curious, how far do some of these songs go back? And for songs like Since I Lost You, how have they evolved over time?
Oh my God, that song, that was a song that I had so many different renditions of it, and I would perform it live a lot. I feel like in like 2018, I had a tendency to just like, because I was getting good. I'm not that good at making demos, but I was getting more comfortable with just like adding like way more layers when I would be demoing at home. I'd get so excited and just like start stacking like so many harmonies and guitar parts. And like, I just kept trying to make that song bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where it just, I don't know, it was almost kind of funny. It was just like too much. And then when I was trying to figure out, I had like a few spaces left for this record because I knew I wanted it to be 10. That was just one. I think I was literally just looking through some folder on my computer and I was like, huh, let me listen to that song. Like, let me just try to just play it simply. And, you know, sometimes like keeping it pretty simple, just, it just slaps. And, I was like, okay, like this song needs to just be more of a lullaby. And we have, Joey and I have a friend that had a, I think it was an 8-track, and we borrowed that and we didn't really practice it or anything. We just called my friend Bill from Starcrawler, who's a really great pedal steel player. Yeah, and we were just like, let's just track this. And I told him the chords. He's so great. Like, he only needs like 2 or 3 takes and he's just got it. So yeah, it was a very, that's the evolution of that song was just like me trying a million different things and then being like, you know what, maybe I should just like let this be this like pure, like sweet song and call a friend to help out. And yeah.
That's really interesting. It's kind of like a full circle thing because it's probably started out kind of simpler and sparse, yeah, and evolved from there. And then kind of came back. So, love is a big theme in your music, whether it's, yes, crushes, heartache, infatuation, those types of feelings. Why do you think that's such a big focus of your songwriting? And how intentional is that on your part when you're writing songs or lyrics?
I mean, love songs, to me, are just the best. What made me actually start writing songs was Taylor Swift's second album, Fearless, which is like the most like autobiographical, just sweet love album, you know? And so It really just was like a very organic teen girl in her bedroom coping with unrequited crushes way of like coping. And it's just kind of stuck. I mean, I think I feel like love songs will never get old, and they just hit so hard, you know? Like a really great sad love song is just like, ugh. I have actually been trying to write songs about other things, which has been a very interesting and challenging process, because I feel like I've only ever written love songs. And so I feel like, I don't know, I've been like, even just because I love the theme of like romance, lately I've been toying around with like some subjects that maybe I'm too afraid to like be, I don't know, as like autobiographical lyrically. Like, love can be an amazing metaphor for other, like a love story could be an amazing metaphor for something else, you know? Having like very love theme songs, it's no more deep than like, it's just how she's always dealt, and she's a romantic girly, you know?
So you mentioned your songs are autobiographical, and that definitely comes through when listening to them.
Yeah.
And a lot of them seem to be really inspired by more painful personal experiences. So what's it like for you to revisit those experiences when you write and record those songs? Is that challenging for you, or are they so remote now that it's not as hard for you or difficult?
It's interesting. I think it's always a little different. Like the title track, for example, that song, I wrote that song very quickly when I needed to. I feel like the most sad, intense ones, I'm just so in it. Like the pain that you hear in the lyrics, that was just so real for me at that time. And I don't know, I kind of laugh at myself sometimes, because I think back to like a lot of songs I've written and literally like tears streaming down my face, like playing guitar and singing. It's very emotionally masochistic. And then as far as playing them live, I don't know. It's like once it becomes a song, it's pretty easy to separate myself from it. And I don't relive it as much as I like get more into like the performative aspect of it.
Sonically, listening to this record, I think you alluded to it a little earlier, it's definitely denser, dreamier sounding than some of the things you released previously. How'd you approach making this record as far as how you wanted it to sound? Did you have an idea of what you wanted it to sound like, or did that come along more organically as you were recording the songs?
Right. So as far as like a like cohesive like sonic idea, I thought I had an idea, but I didn't know what I was getting into. And I really do credit Joey for helping shape it, because I knew I wanted everything to feel big and like fat and poppy, but like just still have that, I don't know, like still have those gritty layers and dreamy layers. It really just kind of came along and became what it is on its own, if that makes sense, like through us, because like Joey didn't, he wasn't like, okay, this is how it's gonna sound, you know. We kind of just figured it out together and just really honed in on what felt right and the, you know, types of tones that sounded good. And I do think the thing that has always been consistent, though, I've very much tried to just step away and be like, does this service the song? Like, is this for, like, does this service the greater good of the song as a song? You know what I mean? And I think that is something I use to make a lot of decisions as far as like, oh, if I'm adding too much, like, am I just being like self-indulgent and I just like want to show off in this guitar part or this vocal line? I don't know. I really just try to like think about like what a listener would like. And I did that a lot with this album.
And you were speaking of metaphors. I mm-hmm. really like, and I think one of my favorite songs on the record is One Way Street.
Mm.
I like how the phrase is used as a metaphor for unrequited love. Tell us a little bit about that track.
Thank you. I really love that song too. And it was a song about someone that I had a weird relationship with, and it was just always something that I wanted to be more, and he really did not want it to be more than what we had. And I think one of those songs that just came out very quickly, and I was probably crying when I wrote the words. Very inspired by Simon and Garfunkel, actually. I was listening to a lot of Simon and Garfunkel when I wrote that song. And it didn't have like the kind of like quiet, sad strut drum in the verses the whole time. Like it used to just be like that same like chug-a-lug kind of beat. But then my friend Henry from Starcrawler, I think he helped us. He played the drums on that song, but I feel like he helped us figure it out to get it to be more like that too. It was another song that I wrote. I let sit for a little bit and came back to it, and then just kind of reworked the instrumentals to like feel, I don't know. I really wanted to capture like the feeling of just being kind of lonely, walking and pondering, and then the acceptance of the chorus. I don't know.
Great song.
Thank you.
And there's some really nice pedal steel on this record provided by Bill Cash, and it makes its way into songs in the middle of the record.
Yeah.
I know the title track Love Letters have some, and so does One Way Streets. It's a great instrument, but I feel like it's, you know, you have to be really deliberate about it. You have to think, oh, this is something I want to add to the track. So was that something you envisioned as part of the song when you were in the studio, or was that something that came up maybe a little later?
I hadn't always envisioned it on there. I think just from demoing, I would always add, or I do always add a little like synth violins, and I had never really considered pedal steel until I think I saw Bill playing. I think it was for Henry and his girlfriend's band Cash and Sky. He was playing pedal steel, and I was like, what the fuck? Like, Bill's an amazing pedal steel player. That's such a random instrument. And I think just talking to Joey, we were trying to figure out what else to add. We were just like, let's try having Bill, because he's one of our friends that we see often, and he's always playing pedal steel for other people. So we were just like, you're going to play for us. we didn't like have parts written out or anything. We literally were just like, make it sound cool on top.
Very cool. Well, it sounds great. And tell me a little bit about the recording process of this record. It seems like this is a record that was recorded piecemeal over time instead of, you know, maybe being in the studio for a short period of time where you're hammered out a bunch of songs like that.
It was recorded, I would say, like, I mean, with the exception of Your Own Ride Home, that's literally an old recording on there. It was really recorded over the span of like a year and a half to 2 years, I would say. Every song was a different session. I did all of my vocals at home alone. I'm getting better at it, but I'm kind of a control freak about how the vocals sound. And so when Joey would go on tour with White Reaper, that was my time where I'd like, you know, have a few days off from work and lock myself in my house and be like, we're getting this done. Mostly done in Joey's studio, like all the drums done in his studio, just over time. We would work on some songs, take breaks on them when, you know, we just kind of felt like we were forcing stuff, and then start working on others. Two of the songs, the first two songs in the record, Band-Aid and Dance Floor, which are two of my favorites, actually, those were the last to be finished because I knew so strongly how I wanted them to sound, like, or how I wanted them to feel, but we just couldn't get it there in the studio. And so that's when I enlisted the help of the amazing Nick Hessler, my bandmate and just friend and inspiration, because he had been talking about how he was working on other people's tracks and wanted to do it more. And I was like, let me see if he's down to try these. And yeah, so you have a healthy mixture of classic studio songs, friends helping work on songs, and some older tracks. So it's like a quilt.
Beautiful. And tell me about Band-Aid and Dance Floor, since you mentioned those two tracks specifically as two of your favorites.
Band-Aid, the original demo I had of that song was way closer to what Nick has. I mean, albeit a very terrible lo-fi garage band version of that. But when I first wrote it, it was like two or three keys lower. It was so lower and so low in my voice. And like, I kept trying to make it rockier every time we would try it out live. And it was one of the songs that I had to stop and be like, okay, this isn't working. I need to like, just give this song time to breathe and like figure it out. And Nick really helped with that. And then Dance Floor is the complete opposite. When I first demoed that song, it had a drum machine and just like so many of the melodies that you hear in it now. But he just like, I feel like the demo of that was like, I found like this little pebble in the sand, and then Nick took it and he was like, bitch, this is going to be a diamond ring. He just really made it so great.
Moving on to the new single you just released, Killing Time. You originally released this song in 2015 as part of the Peaches and Cream EP, and you decided to re-record it. Why'd you want to re-record this song, and what was it like revisiting and reflecting on a song that you wrote over a decade ago.
Woo! Yeah, that's crazy to think about that. Yeah, it's actually, I was practicing for our album release show in the bedroom, and Joey walked in. I just like started singing Killing Time, and he just popped his head in, and he was like, we should re-record that. Like, you sing it way better now. I think we could do some cool stuff to it. And I was like, I've always, you know, the recording of Killing Time from 2015, I was like 19 years old. We recorded that EP in a boiler room of a movie theater that was made to be a recording studio. I can say it now because I don't work for that company. Well, I guess, God, I don't want to get anyone in trouble. But it doesn't freaking matter. It's literally an old movie theater boiler room fashioned to be a recording studio. Yeah, and I just, it's a very sweet recording, but over the years when we've played it, it's always been one of my favorite songs to sing, and it's just, it had so much potential that really isn't captured in that first recording, because I hadn't really played it live when I recorded it, or, like, before I recorded it. That was kind of, like, the first, like, okay, here this is, and then I spent, you know, years getting it to sound so much better, just playing it live so much. So yeah, I was really stoked to re-record it. And Joey's also just been coming into like, his title as like producer more. And I was, it was cool to just be like, okay, like you can take the reins on this. 'Cause for the record, I had pretty like distinct visions regarding most of the songs, but for like the new Killing Time, I was like, yeah, I mean, we kind of like I know that it could be more lively, and we could, there are a lot of parts from live performances that we could incorporate, but like I wasn't like, okay, this is the new sound of it, you know. That was a more him, and it was kind of nice to like let someone take the lead more in that regard, and it definitely made me excited for the future, like bringing, you know, parts of songs to people and collaborating more on like the production aspect of it, I guess, or producing aspect of the song. Yeah.
All right, last question for this part. Actually, kind of like circling back to the beginning. I had this on my list earlier, but then we went off track a little bit. You did get to tour with Peach Kelly Pop for several years at a young age. I remember seeing Peach Kelly Pop a bunch of times in New York and Brooklyn. I remember they actually opened for the Beths one time, like the Beths' first show in the United States or something. So that was cool.
Was that 2018?
Yes.
That, okay. Funny story. Funny nice. Story. Story time.
Love story time. Awesome.
Yeah. If anyone that's listening to this podcast is like really into like the true story behind a song, Flowers from Athens was spawned from someone that I met after that show.
Oh my goodness. In Brooklyn at Alphaville. I think it was at Alphaville.
Yeah, I think I said Manhattan.
But that's okay. You could take liberties with the song. You could do Manhattan.
Yeah.
Totally fine.
I think we ended up going to Manhattan after, so that like that was, I guess that's all I'll say, because I also don't want that person to get mad at me.
Nah, they're not gonna get mad. I don't know.
They're not gonna care.
For everyone listening, Flowers from Athens It's an awesome song. It's the B-side on the Celebrity Crush 7-inch, which you can get at janelanemusic.bandcamp.com. I've played it before when I DJ. People dig it, cool. For sure. But basically, what I wanted to ask was, it must have been cool to do that level of touring at a young age. I know Peach Kelly Pop has an audience in Japan, so you probably got to play Japan a bunch at a young age. And you were able to get a lot of good, solid touring experience under your belt. What was that like for you, and how'd that kind of shape you as a musician?
Oh my God. I mean, it was everything. I learned so much about so many different things. Just being like, there's just so many lessons that one learns being on the road, but also it really just the broadening of like your perspective is, I think, the most incredible thing that you gain from touring. Like, whether it's about all of the people in the world or what you are capable of, things that can happen. It's just like, I didn't grow up with a lot of money. My family, we did not have a lot of money. We did not travel very much. So I was just elated because I was like, I get to go on tour, or I get to travel with my sister who was playing bass in the band with me. So I was like, paid vacation with my sister to rock? Okay. You know, it was great. I feel like I'm a pretty, like, I can be pretty neurotic sometimes, but when it comes to touring, I'm just happy to be traveling. I feel like I'm pretty just stoked all the time. So it was an amazing experience for me. And so many people that I met on those tours, I keep in touch with, or they are Janelane fans and they'll tell me like, I like saw you in Peach Kelly Pop at this time. And like, now you put out Love Letters and it's great, you know? And it just, it's so freaking awesome. I'm very grateful for that time.
Awesome. All right. Now we're going to hear some songs from Love Letters. Again, everyone, you can get Love Letters on vinyl via janelanemusic.bandcamp.com. We're going to play Band-Aid, Dance Floor, and One Way Streets.
Thank you. What do I wait for a phone call? The bitter taste of loneliness, a faithful friend of mine. Will I wake from the stone wall and stop caressing dreams with no place in your eyes? Are you proud of all the tears I cried all the night?
We just heard three songs from Jane Lane's awesome new record, Love Letters. It's out now via Kingfisher Blues. We heard the first track on the record, Band-Aid, followed by the second track on the record, Dance Floor. And then we skipped track three and went to track four, One Way Streets. Again, you could get the record on vinyl via Jane Lane Music. bandcamp.com. All right, now Sophie picked some records. We're gonna talk about them. What's up first?
Blonde on Blonde.
Bob Dylan. Yeah. Robert Zimmerman.
I picked Robert Zimmerman. Two of my favorite songs of all time are I Want You, that's on that record, and it's all, the melody is just perfect. A lot of the records I have on this list, like, are the time from when I was, like, age 15 to 17 was such a, like, crucial, like, musical growth period for me. When I was 15, I was, like, pretty depressed and would, that's when I really started writing songs and demoing a lot, because I had horrible anxiety and depression, and I would just go to school, be, you know, kind of just, like, sleepwalking at school, and then come home and just play guitar for hours. I would constantly search like best power pop records of all time or best power pop songs of all time and just download so much shit, you know? Blonde on Blonde was one. I found it on a power pop list, even though it's totally not. But it is the record that got me into Bob Dylan. And it, I mean, it was just so, I don't know, the just so many of the melodies on that record. It's weird because Bob Dylan, he's such a, you know, an amazing lyricist. I was more into like the melodies on that record than the lyrics. That's what really changed. I don't know. It just, I guess I don't have too much else to say other than like it really broadened my, I don't know, perspective on songwriting and at that age, I don't know. It was just one I would listen to a lot. And actually, if you ever want to search for something kind of embarrassing but sweet, the first thing I ever posted online of me singing, like not doing musical theater, is a cover of It's All Over Now, Baby Blue on YouTube from an account like I don't have access to anymore. So it's just like chubby faced me playing guitar. I'm like 15 or 16 singing it. So yeah.
The drunken politician leaps upon the street where mothers weep, and the saviors who are fast asleep, they wait for you. And I wait for them to interrupt me drinking from my broken cup and ask me to open up the gate for you.
All right, what's next?
Had to put Number One Record by Big Star because it is, you know, I have it framed in my living room. You can't, I don't know if you can really see it back there, but it's over there. That was an album, I think I had read that on some power pop list, and I feel like I just went to Amoeba and bought, I mean, Amoeba Music is a really big, it's like super old school music store in Los Angeles. They've since moved from their iconic location on Sunset to Hollywood Boulevard, I believe, but like it's just such a classic spot. And my dad would occasionally take us there and be like, here's like $15 for each of you, like buy something, you know. That record, I think I had just bought it because I read about it on some website or forum. And I remember so vividly the night that I listened to it, just in my room, just like sitting on the floor, probably hugging my knees. It just, well, firstly, blew my mind because I was like, oh, shit, these guys wrote that 70s show theme song, you know, because In the Street, you'd covered by Cheap Trick, and that 70s show. But yeah, I just, that was one of the craziest times for me. I was just so taken with the songwriting, the lyrics, the melodies. It just was everything that I ever wanted to hear. And it made me so happy and just really made me want to write music like that. Specifically, you know, 13. It's one of my favorite songs ever. That was a very sweet, beautiful time for me when I heard that record. And it just, it felt very sparkly, that moment.
Let me meet you at the pool. Maybe Friday I can get tickets for the dance. Now take.
All right. Third record.
Blonder and Blonder by the Muffs.
Great record.
Yes. Yes. huge, huge power pop melodies that were and still are so inspiring to me, and a huge reason why most of the songs I write are like on the shorter side, because I think so many Muff songs are just like, they just fucking do what they need to do so damn beautifully, you know, like solid intro, solid pop verse, banging chorus, and they do it again. Amazing outro by Kim. And I also just like, you know, rest in peace, Kim Shattuck. It was absolutely horrible. And I just feel like she is such an underrated songwriter and guitar player. Like, people always talk about her songwriting, but that band, most of the time, I think Blunder and Blunder, maybe they had another guitar player in, for that record. I don't know. But yeah, she's just someone that I think is super underrated in all forms. I don't know. Like, I feel like people, I have read articles written about her, and they just kind of say like, yeah, like she writes like these sugary pop songs. And I feel like it's so much more than that. It's really hard to write, I don't know, timeless sounding pop rock. And that was like every Muff song.
All right, what's next?
A more recent band that I have fallen in love with. I put Uncommon Weather by the Reds, Pinks, and Purples. My sister actually introduced me to that band because in 2022, there was this festival in Oakland called the Oakland Weekender, and it had a lot of Slumberland Records bands. And so I was going through kind of a hard time around the time I wrote Love Letters, actually. And she brought me to that music festival. And there were so many amazing bands. Like, every band that I watched, I was just like, I love you. Like, Sea Blight was one of them.
Amazing band.
Yeah. Fucking incredible. Kids on a Crime Spree, which is a super old band that I
they're
didn't
coming
think
back though, it seems. I think they put out a good record a couple years ago. I think they're putting out another record. They rule.
Yeah, they're so fucking great. And so everyone in all of those bands is also just like insanely nice. And then the Umbrellas played too.
Another great band. Sounds like it was a sick weekender festival.
All of those bands and that whole experience just like really gave me just so much hope and inspiration when I really needed it. I was going through a really sad, hard time. And then, so the Reds, Pinks, and Purples, I would just say like, of all of the sets that I saw, like that set was just, I mean, it brought me to tears. Like, those songs were just so beautiful and prompted me to write so many new songs and finish like songs on the record. I wrote Clean on that trip and I finished it after like the night. I was just so inspired after I saw them. It doesn't sound anything like a Reds, Pinks, and Purple song, but Clean, which is track 6 on Love Letters, I finished after saw those guys, because I was, I don't know, I'd kind of let it sit and then I was like, I'm gonna do this. The records, could you get your hands on? Fire.
All right, Sophie, congrats on the release of Love Letters. Everyone, you can get a copy of Love Letters at janelanemusic.bandcamp.com. Also, as we talked about, there's a new single called Killing Time out, which is available on all streaming platforms and also available for digital download at janelanemusic.bandcamp.com. And Sophie, I know Jane Lane has a show coming up in August. It's on August 16th at Genghis Cohen in Los Angeles. Mirrorball, awesome dream pop band from LA, are on the bill. And Floor Blue E from France are also on the bill.
They're so good. I was so excited when they hit me. I hadn't heard of them before, but I listened to their music after they asked us to play, and I was like, fuck yes, I will.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah, and Mirrorball, I've always really loved and wanted to play with, so I'm so stoked about that show.
Anything else on the horizon? What's next for the project?
Yeah, I'm honestly just really excited to work on the next batch of songs. I would like to do like a mini tour up the coast. That would be something really cool, like for the second half of the year. I'm going to Tokyo with Joey, and I am playing a show.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
In Tokyo. Yeah. So I'm really excited because I've actually been sending a lot of merch over there. So I've been leaving notes in all of the packages being like, I'm going to be there on October 19th at Asagaya.
Well, that is very cool and exciting. Again, reminder everyone, Jane Lane will be at Genghis Cohen in Los Angeles on August 16th. And you can get Love Letters at janelanemusic.bandcamp.com. We're going to finish today's episode by playing the most recent Jane Lane single that we talked about earlier. This is called Killing Time. Sophie, thank you.
Thanks, homie.
I never understood how I had opened up your locker. I never knew the combination or had to tweak the dial so that I could steal all that was inside. Guess no one ever really saw me as a thief. My fingers aching, I can barely